Again, thank you so much for being here. We have been looking at the kings of Israel, and we're going to continue on in this study this evening. In our last class together, we of course moved into the reign of King Solomon. He begins that reign, as we discussed, by proclaiming some punishments, some judgments on different individuals, and we looked at some of those are mentioned in 1 Kings chapter 2. And then following that, we have recorded by the author of 1 Kings the wisdom that God bestowed upon upon Solomon. When God asked him, you know, what do you want from me? And I'm paraphrasing, but basically asked anything, right? You ask it, I'm going to give it to you. God gives him, he asked for wisdom, and that's what God gave him. And then we looked at that test, that interesting interaction he has with the two ladies who have the child there, and how he displayed his great wisdom that God had given him in that situation. In this study, as we move forward into the reign of King Solomon, we're going to notice there's going to be a lengthy period of peace and serenity and prosperity in the kingdom. And they're going to be very blessed. Solomon personally is going to be very blessed during this time. King Solomon will, during this time period, he will finally begin the construction on a permanent structure for the temple of God, where the Ark of the Covenant would be kept. And of course he will follow the blueprints of the tabernacle that traveled with the children of Israel. Solomon will also build his own palace, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Solomon will also look at the construction of the temple furniture briefly. We're not going to spend a lot of time, but that briefly. And then finally, the Ark of the Covenant. It's going to be a very momentous moment. I'm using that word twice, aren't I? It's going to be a very important moment in the history of the children of Israel when the Ark is brought in, and we're going to talk about that for just a couple of minutes. That's where we're looking forward to tonight. So let's go to 1 Kings chapter 4, and we'll notice how God, because of Solomon's faithfulness, will bestow peace and prosperity on the nation. And we're just going to hit some highlights here. We're not going to go through each verse. So I encourage you, go back, read 1 Kings chapter 4 through 11. That's the section we're going to be covering. Take some time, read through that. Also, supplement that with 2 Chronicles. Early part of 2 Chronicles will also deal with this period of time as well. The detail, though, is you'll notice it's almost exactly the same in those two books. All right, so, sorry, I'm skipping. I don't mean to be doing that. All right, so let's go to verse 20, 1 Kings 4, chapter 4. The text tells us that Judah and Israel. Now notice that we've been kind of hinting at this. You notice the identities here. It's not the kingdom of Israel, the kingdom of Judah. It's Judah and Israel. So you already start to see a divide. Do we have kind of a artificial divide in our country? We do, right? We have the north and the south. We have the south, the west, the east, the Midwest, right? We kind of have some artificial divisions. Can that cause conflict at times? It has in our past, right? And it's possible. We can divide on a lot more stuff than that, but even just like from a national kind of instance. What about conservative and liberal? Right? People divide on those. Well, you have a political division occurring, a national division occurring in amongst the children of God. You have Israel and Judah. And we're going to talk about that as we move forward. But I just want to note that. Just note how the language has changed. And now they're forming these identities. It says they were as many as the sands by the sea. Ooh, that ought to recall something to your mind. Does that recall some things that spark a memory of Genesis chapter 12, chapter 19, chapter 17 also? What did that have to relate to? Abraham, right? God's promises to Abraham. What was God's promise? Number one, you'll have a son. Number two, what? It'll be numberless. He says, as the stars in the sky, as the sand on the seashore. He also promised him a land. There's three promises. The land promise, the children promise, and then the Messiah promise. Well, just taken right out of that promise, what does the author of 1 Kings note? Israel has prospered, not just in wealth, not just in power, but even in number. He says the numbers are you know, as the sand on the seashore. Now, you ever want to sit down on the beach and start counting sand pebbles? That's a fruitless task, isn't it? Why? Well, there's too many of them. He notes that they ate and drank and were happy. That's a nice little vacation, isn't it? To think that you can be happy, right? That sense of serenity. Solomon ruled over all the kingdoms from the Euphrates to the land of the Philistines to the border of Egypt. You can note here, this map is entitled the United Monarchy. This is during the time of David and the time of Solomon, really. Really is glued together in the time of Solomon, but you have on all borders, he has peace. All surrounding borders, he has peace. Even here with Philistia, all of those borders are at peace during his reign. Why is peace important? Why is it important for a nation to be at peace? What's the benefit of being at peace?
Rebuild, to be able to restore and, you know, grow your crops and grow children, don't be bored.
Okay, yeah, so it's a time of building. You can build, you can explore. It gives you opportunity to do things that during time of war you can't do. When it's time of war, where's all the focus? On war, right? War is a draining attention and focus thing. Not only is it dangerous, not only is it expensive, not only is it all these other things, but it is. War is also bad in that it steals all focus. But during times of peace, there's opportunity to do other things. You can focus on other things. Well, that's what they do. But one thing I do want you to notice, even on the map here, you can tell the green area is the kingdom of Israel. The purple area is the kingdom of Judah. And you notice Jerusalem is on the far north border of Judah. But you can already start to see how that these identities are beginning to show themselves. So he has peace on all sides. The end of verse 21 says they brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. Now, we'll come back to that last little phrase there later on when we get to the end of his life. But this is a time of prosperity and peace for the children of Israel. Going down to verse 24, it says he had dominion over the region west of the Euphrates. And then he goes on through here. But again, the end of verse 24, he had peace on all sides. That's the emphasis there. Peace on all of his borders. Judah and Israel lived in safety from Dan even to Beersheba. Every man under his vine and under his fig tree all the days of Solomon. So a very good time to be an Israelite. Very good time. Verse 29, God gave Solomon, now he's already given him wisdom at one point. Now notice what happens again. Verse 29, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure. Seems to be emphasizing God gave him even more wisdom, more understanding, and the breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore. So that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all people, of all the people from east, and all the wisdom of Egypt, for he was wiser than all other men. And then it lists some individuals that the author says he's wiser than even these noted individuals. And it says at the end of that, his fame was in all surrounding nations. Now, it wasn't just like he was known in the nation of Israel as being a wise man. We even see how that spread beyond the borders. It even goes as far as Egypt, where the queen there will come to visit him because of his wisdom. And we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but just want you to note that. But the text here is trying to note to us that that Solomon, his fame had grown well beyond the borders of Israel. He notes in verse 32 some of the treasures that Solomon had given to the people and even left to us. It says in verse 32 that he spoke 3,000 proverbs. Now, what's a proverb? Oh, somebody say something. What's a proverb?
A wise saying.
When you think of wise sayings, who do you think of? Who comes to your mind first, other than Solomon?
David.
You think maybe of David?
Solomon.
Other than Solomon and David, who would you say? You say Solomon.
Jesus.
What about Confucius? You know, people talk about Confucius. You think about, I'm just trying to make a point here. Like, you know, we look up to people who give us wise saying. Well, Solomon was the wisest of them all. And so you turn over to the book of Proverbs, and you have a large portion of his collected sayings there. Now, not all of them are Solomon's, but a vast majority of them are. I was talking to Jody, I think it was Jody a few weeks ago, about studying Proverbs. And Proverbs is kind of a difficult book to study. Patrick did a good study of it, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago now. But it was a good study. But it's interesting. When you go to the book of Proverbs, what do you notice about it? Anything's come out to you, jump out to you?
Proverbs?
Yeah.
Well, it's all over the place, in my opinion.
Okay. And that's one of the things I would think about it too, right? It's you can tell it's a collection. There's not a sequence really of this category's here, this category's here, and you go to a different chapter to go to a different category. That's not the way it's written. There are portions of it like that, but the vast majority is just, it's just a collection. It's almost like somebody got, if Solomon had written the little cookies, you know, you get at a fortune cookies, right? And they just started opening them up and whatever it was, he started writing them down. But in a sense, that's kind of what he did. He collected proverbs, his own and other people, and he began to make a collection of those. Well, the Proverbs, the book that we have, is a treasure of Solomon that he left behind for us. I'd venture to say it's probably not all of what he had written down or said, but he definitely shared his wisdom. It says his songs were 1,005. That's an interesting number, isn't it? It's not a rounded number. It doesn't seem to be any. Why?
Because
if I was around, you know, anybody, you say, he had like 1,000, right? It says 1,005. I think that's interesting. Now, I don't know. That may be a little bit of the Hebrew language and you know, and how it's interpreted. Sometimes numbers get real difficult. But where do you find his songs at? Well, he devoted a whole book to some romantic songs that he wrote. But you also go to the Psalms, right? And he wrote many of those. David also, I don't know who, I imagine David has more of them in there than Solomon, but Solomon has some of his there as well. So, an interesting guy, very prolific. It also goes on to say in verse 33 that he spoke of trees, from the cedar that is in Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the wall. So he was a bit of a herbologist. He made it a study of studying plant life. Very eclectic guy. It says that he spoke of beasts and birds, of reptiles, of fish. My son would be excited about that. Bear loves those things. Well, Solomon studied those things. Wouldn't you love to have a science book from Solomon? I always wondered, did he write these things down? Did they just get lost to history? But he studied these things and looked at them. And so I find that fascinating about him. We also have, as far as his collected wisdom, so what books do we have? We have Proverbs, we mentioned that. We've got the Psalms, right? Song of Solomon, Ecclesiastes, which we're going to learn a lot about over the next few months. You know, we've got these wonderful writings of his that we need to take time to study and to look at. And it's God sharing his wisdom through Solomon. So a little bit about Solomon there. It says in verse 34, "And people of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom." You know, today you'd have a podcast that was highly acclaimed, right? He'd do the video and the podcasting. He'd probably have a show somewhere that you could watch. That's what he did. In essence, people were just coming to him to learn from him. And so chapter 4 really gives you at least a picture, a window into the life of Solomon during this time of peace. Then we go into chapter 5, and chapter 5 is, we're not noted exactly when it occurred to my knowledge, but at some point during this period of time, he begins to actually construct the temple. Now, we go back in our minds, where's the first time we ever see a glimpse of the temple? Well, let me back up before we do that. What is the temple or tabernacle of the Lord? What was it? What did it represent? It's kind of significant. It's what? God's dwelling place. Sort of, right? Let's think about this a little bit deeper. You're right. It is noted as his dwelling place. But is it really his dwelling place? Yes.
You need to recognize he's there, even though he controls everything.
Yeah, if you go to, let's say we go to Acts 17. When Paul is on Mars Hill and he's talking about the various idols that they have around, what does he say to them? He says, none of these are gods. I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but go back and read it. He says, none of these are really gods. Because why? God doesn't need a house built by human hands. God doesn't dwell in a house. But what it did represent was his dwelling with the children of Israel, his presence with them. asked this last week, I wonder if anybody done any study, but did God ever ask for a temple, a permanent structure to be built? A temple. Whose idea was that?
David.
What did God ask for? A tabernacle to be built. Where do you find that at? Where is that? Yes. I believe it's in Exodus 17. You can go back and somebody double check me on that. But in the book of Exodus, as they have left Egypt, and now they're beginning this journey, which will take 40 years wandering in the wilderness, God gives them directions, and He's very direct. He spends a large portion of the book of Exodus talking about the tabernacle, its furniture, and the priest. He spends a lot of time, we studied this on a Thursday morning study a couple weeks ago, looking at the tabernacle. Now that's what God asked for. Now, what's unique about the tabernacle as opposed to the temple? It's mobile. It's not permanent. What do you notice? Let me think how to ask this question. I'm trying to get us to get our brains firing here. Okay.
It was a place for God to dwell.
What was, exactly, what was in the Ten Commandments, when Moses comes down and he delivers those Ten Commandments, what are those first three commandments all about?
God's place in their life.
I am, right?
And you are to have no other gods. Don't worship anything made by human hands. Because God knows us as human beings, we have a natural draw toward idolatry. We do. There's something in human beings, something that we find ourselves. I mean, look, they just come out of the Egyptian bondage. God's done all those miracles to get them here to this mountain. Moses goes up. He's gone for a little while. What do they find themselves doing? Building an idol. Now, why do they do that? Think about this in your mind. You want to think a little bit behind the scenes. Why do they do that? Where do they just come from? What are they doing in Egypt? They're worshiping idols. How long have they known God? Not very long. Prior to Moses grabbing them out of Egypt, what kind of relationship did they have with God? They didn't really have a relationship with God. What they knew was Egyptian culture, which taught them idolatry. Why do they go so quickly to idolatry? It's what they know. Now, they shouldn't have done it. It's still sinful, and I'm not trying to make excuses for it. It's still evil. But there's something about us, about wanting to worship. Now, what happens in Israel after the construction of the temple? All you got to do is go later on, after they've been in bondage, and they come back, and they rebuild the temple. What do the people who remember the old temple do immediately? They cried. Why? It wasn't as pretty as Solomon's temple. Man, you should have seen that. That thing was beautiful. Because they made it about a place. Now, I don't know why God never instructed them to build a temple. But my opinion is, God didn't want this. God didn't want them worshiping a place, of esteeming it above Him. But what do we as humans do? We're naturally inclined to fall in love with fleshly things. So, before we get into the temple construction, I just want us to think about that premise. This isn't what God really asked for. It wasn't what he asked for. But God allows it. So, go ahead.
So, question related to the Bible, do we do the same thing today?
Oh, absolutely. Do we have idols today? Can this become an idol?
We worship coming to the building sometimes instead of worshiping God. We worship the building, and that's not the idea behind having a place.
Is there anything wrong with having a building? Absolutely not. Was there anything wrong with them building the temple? No, God never said don't do it. God actually will endorse it later on. And there's nothing wrong with us having pews and a building that's comfortable, but we can never allow the building to become the thing. It needs to be what it is. And if we begin to see it more than that, then we're in trouble. There's a lot of other things we could talk about that can become idols in our lives. Our job, our homes, our cars, our spouses, our children. We can idolize anything. And by saying that, I'm not saying you're saying, you know, we love our spouses, we love our children, we can enjoy our homes. But what place do they take up in our lives? And are they more valuable to us than God? The rich young man who comes to Jesus and asks the good question, what do I do to inherit eternal life? What is Jesus' response? He says, keep the commandments. I've done that since I was a child. Of course, Jesus didn't actually ask him if he's been doing that. Jesus knows he has. You go back, and Jesus hasn't answered his question yet. You notice he answers his question at the end when he says, but one thing you lack. Sell all that you have, give to the needy, and then come follow me. Jesus knew his heart. And he had idolized all those things he had. Those things were more important to him than serving God. So, with that in mind, let's focus now on the temple. Now, chapters 5 through about chapter 11, 1 Kings, deal with the construction of the temple. We're going to highlight some of those. Oh, sorry, I don't mean to keep skipping ahead. Verse 1 of chapter 5 states that, now Hiram, king of Tyre, sent his servants to Solomon when he heard that they had anointed him king in the place of his father, for Hiram loved David. Now, we're first introduced to Hiram, if you go back to 2 Samuel, I don't have it up on the board, but 2 Samuel 5 and verse 11, where, do you remember what he did for David? Yeah, he gave him the materials for David to build his house. Now he's going to do something very similar for Solomon. Now, Tyre is an important city. It's just north of Israel, up here, right on the coast. Tyre's a really interesting study of a city. Tyre's interesting because they're right on the coast, and right out from the coast, they have a little island that, if you remember, they were attacked a couple of times, and they tried to evade, and the first time it worked, they ran out to the island and waited for the attack to end, and then came back home. Second time, Alexander the Great built that bridge across and eventually destroyed Tyre. But Hiram, the king of Tyre, is a friend, of David, and now is going to become a friend of Solomon. He offers to help. Now, what's Tyre known for?
Trees.
And it's also known for, I believe it's silversmith. I'll look that up in just a second. But they were good at this. They were good at construction. They were good. They had good trees there. So they offer to help out. And Solomon takes them up. It says, verse 2, he sent word to Hiram, you know that David, my father, could not build a house for the name of the Lord. Why couldn't he? Well, he goes on to explain, because he was a man of warfare. Verse 4, now the Lord my God has given me rest on every side. There's neither adversary nor misfortune. Remember what we talked about before? What can you do in times of peace? Well, another thing that the Israelites could do was they finally had an opportunity to build the temple. They couldn't have done that before because of all the war that was going on. But now they finally can. He goes on, verse 5, so I intend to build a house for the name of the Lord my God, as the Lord said to David my father, your son whom I will set on your throne in your place shall build the house for my name. Now therefore command the cedars of Lebanon to be cut for me, and my servants will join your servants, and I will pay for your servants such as wages as you set. For you know that there is no one among us who knows how to cut timber like the Sidonians. Right, and so they're known for this, so they begin to work. Verses 7 and following, Hiram agrees to do this. You know what he says there, blessed be the Lord, verse 7, who has given David a wise son to be over the great, over this great people. Hiram also said to Solomon, I've heard the message you sent to me. I am ready to do all you desire in the matter of cedars and cypress timber. Verse 10 tells us that he supplied Solomon with all the timber that was needed, both cedar and cypress. Verse 12, I'm going through these kind of quick. If you need me to slow down, just raise your hand. I'll look up occasionally. And the Lord gave Solomon wisdom. You know that again, God is continuing to bless him. You know, I'm reminded again of what James tells us. If any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God who gives it exceedingly. There was peace, verse 12, between Hiram and Solomon, and the two of them made a treaty together. All right, so that's chapter 5. You're going in chapter 6. It continues. verse 1 says, in the 480th year after the people of Israel came out of the land of Egypt. Think about that. It's been a while since they've been here. So 480 years since they left Egypt. Well, we know it took them 40 years to get to the land of promise. And then it took a certain amount of time to overcome the area. And now since the time of the leaving of Egypt to now, it's 480 years before they actually get to the construction of the temple. In the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, which is the second month, he began to build the house of the Lord. So in his fourth year, he begins to build it. When does he complete it? Verse 11, go all the way down to the end of the chapter, verse 37. In the fourth year, the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid in the month of Ziv. In the 11th year, in the month of Bul, which is the eighth month, the house was finished in all its parts according to all specifications. He was 7 years in building it. So from the beginning of the construction of the temple to the end, it took 7 years. This is a pretty big project to build. Thought I had a map of the temple on here. Oh, here. Well, it's probably too small to see, but you can see it here. the temple itself. Now, it was built in accordance with the pattern laid out in the book of Exodus with the tabernacle. So as far as the actual temple itself, you have the court. I think later on this will be in the second temple, even later here. What would that court be known as? The Solomon's court or Solomon's porch area. As you went into the tabernacle itself, what would be the first area you would come to? Well, it would be the holy place. I'm talking about the actual temple itself. If you're coming into the temple proper, that first room you would enter, there's only really two rooms that are there, would be the holy place. Now, but there was only certain individuals who could go in there. Who were those?
The high priest.
The Levites, right? The priest could go in there, not just the high priest here. But it would be the Levites. And then you would have this veil that was created. And 1 Kings spends some real time discussing the construction of this and what was there. But you would enter in behind there. And, of course, that would be where the Ark of the Covenant would be kept. And that would be the place only the high priest could go once a year, two times. And so this was actually a room that was not entered very often. Regular individual could not go into that room. Now he did, well, I'll let you look at the rest of it, but there were some basins, some other things that he had there. But that was the temple. Kind of simple in layout, but intricate in design. As you read that, I encourage you to go back and read the text there as he continues to build the tabernacle. Any questions about that? I didn't want to spend a lot of time on the details. I'll let you go back, and if you have a question about it, we can deal with it.
Well, the temple also had additional rooms and stuff. I think they built on the sides.
Yeah.
That were not part of the actual tabernacle itself, or actually the temple where God's service was done.
Yeah, no, but I think originally this is what it was. Now, the one thing I didn't mention here that I was trying to find, but you had this greater court or the outer court surrounding the tabernacle. He also did have some priestly, some priest quarters in here. But now, of course, later on, the second one is built a little bit differently than the original. And you can just look at it and see the differences, how it had changed. Good questions. One of the things that I'm taken aback by reading it in the details is just how intricate the design was. You go back and read about the seraphim that create the kind of boundary between the holy place and the most holy, and how their wings extend over a cross and actually touch one another. You also read about all the gold that was in the temple. I mean, it had everything was overlaid with gold. It would have been something to see. Of course, not very many people could see it as far as the interior part. But very different. And so I don't want to venture out too much in discussing things. I'm not a part of this lesson. But anyway, so it takes him 7 years to build that. As you get into chapter 7, and I'm just going to briefly mention this before we have to close today. Chapter 7, he gets into building his own home, his palace. Chapter 7 spends a lot of time doing that. It says Solomon, verse 1, was building his own house 13 years. He spent 7 on the temple and 13 on his own. It takes a long time to finish it. I would have also loved to have seen that as well. From the description in Scripture, it sounds like something really crazy to see, beautiful to see. He spends a great amount of time doing that. And then as you continue looking here in chapter 7, it gets into the construction of the temple furniture and the different items. Now, originally, as we close, what was in the original tabernacle as far as furniture goes? Showbread. All right. So you'd have the table of showbread and the candlesticks, or the what do you call it? The big candle holder would have been there. So in the most inner room, you'd have the Ark of the Covenant, which would have, at various times it had different things, but at different times the Ark of the Covenant would have had the tablets, the stone tablets. It would have had Aaron's rod that had budded, and it had a bowl of manna inside of it. That was basically it inside of that room. You come out on this side of the veil, you would have had the table of showbread, you would have had the candle, and you would have had table of incense. That's it. Table of incense would have been there as well. Now, over time, some things got added to that, but that was the basic things that were there to begin with. All right. We'll continue with this. We'll go on into God's ordaining the temple construction and what occurred there, and then we'll move to the end of Solomon's life, where things don't go as well as they should have, and we'll see. One of the things I want us to think about is how what Solomon did at the table for what came later in the division of the country itself. Thank you all so much. We'll be dismissed. We'll be back in here in just a few minutes for our devotion time. Thank you.